So the title of my preach this morning is I'm Responsible. And where this came about was probably back in January. It was after the leadership meeting that John shared his heart with us as a leadership team about where he saw the direction of the church going and all of the things around the leadership changes in terms of Richard's role and what was expected of Dave and myself. And I can remember having a chat with Richard about this, about the first Sunday he turned up here after that had been almost set in place and the wheels were in motion. Because he turned up here and all of a sudden he felt that amazing sense of responsibility in terms of what he was going to be taking on, what God had given him to do. And it caused him to really start calling to God and, you know, saying, yeah, I'm responsible, and taking hold of it. And it made me think about my own responsibilities in my life and the way that I approach those on a day-to-day basis, because I really do think that we need to take our responsibilities before God on a daily basis and declare them before him. But to do that, obviously, we need to know what they are and how to manage them appropriately. So it could get me thinking sort of from then to now about my responsibilities. Were they the right things? Am I doing them in the right order? All of those kind of things. So we'll skip through some of that today. And also, I think the recent preaching has really drawn out this for me. When Rich Penske talked about being ambassadors, that's a really big responsibility, that being a representative and a representation of Christ. We need to take that seriously. And when Richard has been talking about the vineyard workers and also the parable of the talents, it all comes back to what we do with what God has given us to be responsible for. And we've all got responsibilities that need to be managed and considered seriously. And it's very, very different for all of us. I recognise that. And actually, what I'm talking about here is responsibilities in the really broadest sense of the word. It's not about whether you're a manager or you've got some high brow job or whether you're a church leader or all of these things. Actually, we've all been given things to be responsible for, and they're equally as important if God has given them to us and we need to outwork them. So, and what I think about that is when we really understand what our responsibilities are in terms of what God has given us, we can approach them with authority and declare them before him. So when Rich turned up here and started saying, I'm responsible for the church, for leading that church on a day-to-day basis, he was really, you know, declaring that before God as, you know, yes, I'm going to do this, and yes, I understand what it is you've given me to do. So what I did was I looked at what I think my main responsibilities are. There's probably more on this list. And I have kind of ordered them. I think I've ordered them in some sort of order, but we'll see. So, well, we'll see how they come out. And I'm going, no, that's not quite right. So first of all, I think, you know, I'm a Christian, and my main priority is to walk humbly before God and to do what it is that he's called me to do. Secondly, I'm a wife to Dave, and I think I do an okay job at that. I'm a mum to Freddie, which, again, I think I do okay. I'm part of the church leadership team here. I have responsibilities there. And it is even today, in preparing for this, I felt that real sense of responsibility that what I'm bringing is going to bring life, it's going to be biblical, it's going to be all of those things. So the sense of responsibility there is really, really big. I'm responsible for church administration, making sure that things run smoothly here and that everyone is where they need to be and all of that kind of stuff. And then probably this is the last thing I've put on the list. I'm a manager at Southwest Commissioning Support in the NHS, and I've put manager of a team of business analysts, but actually that's expanded over the last week because I've got a whole admin team now and I'm responsible for our contracted staff. So I have a role in the workplace which has got some responsibilities. So those are probably the main things in my life. And as I said, we're all different. You know, Dave's list is quite different from mine. There is some crossover, obviously. He hasn't got a wife. And so there's some crossover in the highest level. But under that, he's got other things that he does. So, you know, he's a trustee of the church. He is on the committee at Frenchay Village Hall. He's a school governor at Michelle's school. So he's got all of these other things. And also, as well, he feels a responsibility to the rugby club where Freddie plays when he's not injured. And that's a responsibility to support that club and to be committed and turn out even when it's windy and rainy and all of those things. And we can all identify these things. And Galatians 6, verse 4 to 5 says, "Pay careful attention to your own work, for then you will get satisfaction of a job well done. And you won't need to compare yourself to anyone else, for we are each responsible for our own conduct." And what that says to me is, you know, and I've done it before, you know, I have done this whole, "Oh, I wish I was a bit more like that. I wish I was like this. Oh, I wish I had that job. I wish I, you know, could do this, that and the other." Actually, what we're required to do is not compare ourselves to one another. We've all got different things to do, and the work is equally as important if God has given it to us to do. And as I was preparing for this, I came across, there's some scriptures in 1 Chronicles 9 where the exiles are returning to Jerusalem, and it lists out this whole different thing of all these different people doing different jobs. You know, some people were gatekeepers, some people were making bread, and some people were responsible for worship. And it's very clear about what the responsibilities were and who was doing what. And I think in one part it even says, and the worship leading group didn't do anything else. That was what they did. They didn't, you know, try and be a gatekeeper or try and make the bread. So it was really, really clear. So my first question to you, and there will be homework at the end of this in preparation for the next home group that Dave and I lead, is, do you know what God has given you responsibility for? It's worth probably asking the question again of yourselves, because there could be stuff you're doing that you might be responsible for, but it might be that God doesn't want you to do it. You know, that's a challenge there. But my main, I suppose, look at scriptures in this is from really my Bible hero. Are you allowed a Bible hero other than Jesus? I think you can, can't you? So I wonder if anyone can guess who they might think my Bible hero would be in trying to approach this task of preaching about responsibility. Moses. No, not Moses.
Joseph.
No.
Paul.
No. Girl. It's a girl. Ruth. No, not Ruth.
Mary.
No.
Martha.
No. Right, okay. Rachel. No, any Deborah. It's Deborah, yes. She is my Bible hero. And we all know the story, don't we? Deborah is the fourth judge in the book of Judges. And what distinguishes her from the other judges that are mentioned is that it is claimed in all study things that you can look into that she was the most godly of all judges, and her actions and words consistently pointed people towards God and not away from him, unlike the other judges, like, who made quite poor choices. So Gideon and Simeon, we all know they made some pretty poor choices. So she was an ordinary woman called by God to take responsibility and make a difference during a critical season of change in her nation. And the way that she approached this was by revelation. So she was able to undertake her role and the responsibility she'd been given because she was close to God, and it was by revelation that she was able to do that and to bring the nation of Israel into a real place of freedom. So I thought we'd delve in to Judges 4, and I will read it all just so we can remind ourselves of that story. I won't go into Judges 5 because it is the song that Deborah and Barak sang. And I'd love to one day try and put some of these things to music, because the words are really funny, and I just wonder how it would all translate into a proper song. So Judges 4, and I'm reading from the English Standard Version. "And the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord after Ehud died. And the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth Hagoyim. Then the people of Israel cried out to the Lord for help, for he had 900 chariots of iron, and he oppressed the people of Israel cruelly for 20 years. Now Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was judging Israel at that time. She used to sit under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the people of Israel came up to her for judgment. She sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinoam, from Kedesh Naphtali, and said to him, "Has not the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you? Go gather your men at Mount Tabor, taking 10,000 from the people of Naphtali and the people of Zebulun, and I will draw out Sisera, the general of Jabin's army, to meet you by the river Kishon with his chariots and his troops, and I will give him into your hand." Barak said to her, "If you will go with me, I will go, but if you will not go with me, I will not go." And she said, "I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the road on which you are going will not lead to your glory, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman." Then Deborah arose and went back to Barak, to Kadesh. And Barak called out Zebulun and Naphtali to Kadesh, and 10,000 men went up on his hills, and Deborah went up with him. Now Heber the Kenite had separated from the Kenites, descendants of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses, and had pitched his tent as far away as the oak in Zananim, which is near Kadesh. When Sisera was told that Barak, the son of Abinoam, had gone up to Mount Tabor, Sisera called out his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, and all the men who were with him, from Harosheth Hagoyim to the river Kishon. And Deborah said to Barak, "Up, for this is the day which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. Does not the Lord go before you?" So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. And the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and fled on foot. And Barak pursued the chariots and the army to Harosheth Hagoyim. And all the army of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword. Not a man was left. But Sisera fled away on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. For there was peace between Jabin, the king of Hazor, and the house of Heber the Kenite. And Jael came out to meet Sisera and said to him, "Turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me, do not be afraid." So he turned aside to her into the tent, and she covered him with a rug. And he said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty." So she opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him. And he said to her, "Stand at the opening of the tent, and if a man comes and asks you, 'Is anyone here?' say no." But Jael, the wife of Heber, took a tent peg and took a hammer in her hand, and then she went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple until it went down into the ground while he was lying fast asleep from weariness. There's a woman you don't want to be near. And he died. And behold, as Barak was pursuing Sisera, Jael went out to meet him and said to him, "Come, and I will show you the man whom you are seeking." So he went into her tent, and there lay Sisera dead with the tent peg in his temple. So on that day, God subdued Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the people of Israel. And the hand of the people of Israel pressed harder and harder against Jabin, the king of Canaan, until they destroyed Jabin, king of Canaan. And then it goes into Judges 5, and we hear the great song that Deborah and Barak sang. So just a few points to pull out in terms of responsibilities from that. One, yeah, don't go into a tent with an angry woman, I would suggest. I've got 5 quick points, I think. Yes, I did get to 5. So, number one, you need to know your responsibilities that you've been given and take them seriously. So when we see in Judges 4, it says, "Now Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was judging Israel at the time. She used to sit under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim, and the people of Israel came up to her for judgment." For me there, it's quite clear. She was a prophetess, which I think was probably her standing before God. So when I read out my list at the beginning, you can say, yeah, she served God. She was a wife. And so we don't know too much about her husband or any of that. And I've got many questions I want to sit down and ask her when we get to heaven about what happened. How did you have children? How is it you came to be a judge? Was there a discussion with your husband that led to you ending up in this role? Because it was quite a senior role, obviously, within Israel. And she was a woman, and that was all a bit different. And it reminded me of last year when we were at New Wine, and we were at this leaders kind of networking thing, and you meet quite a lot of female vicars there, and that's all great, and I'm not anti-female vicar, but what's really unusual is when their husbands are there, and their husbands are not in leadership with them. Does that make sense? And they go, oh no, she does that. And that's quite hard for like me to kind of work out how all that works. And yeah, it's just really unusual. But I guess for this one, it doesn't say that her husband served alongside her as a judge. I think he had well standing within the community, but she took on this role and led. And obviously people came up to her for judgment. She was a listening ear. People came up and sat down. So those were her three responsibilities. And Romans 12 and verse 8 says, if your gift is to encourage others, be encouraging. If it is giving, give generously. If God has given you leadership ability, take responsibility seriously. And if you have a good gift for showing kindness to others, do it gladly. And what really came out from this verse for me was this: if God has given you leadership ability, take responsibility seriously. And I think this scripture is in relation to the leadership of the church, but actually we all have, or some of us have, great responsibilities in the workplace, in managing, in looking after people. And we need to, where we're looking after people, we need to really, really take that seriously. And what's great about Deborah, and we see it in chapter 5 and verse 7, it says, the villages ceased in Israel. They ceased to be until I arose. I, Deborah, arose as a mother of Israel. She knew what she was responsible for. She was able to, like Richard, say, I am responsible. I am a mother of Israel. And it's exactly what we need to do. We need to say, you know, I am a son and daughter of God, and I am responsible for my walk with God and all that means. You know, I am wife, I am a husband, I am a mother, I am responsible in the workplace, I'm a teacher. Whatever it is, you can stand up and declare that, as long as you of course know what that is. And what's been great, yesterday as I was preparing, I thought, I need to just get some quotes. And a couple of quotes came to mind from a couple of Tom Cruise movies, which is great. So I could sit and watch some early Tom Cruise movies yesterday afternoon. And two particular films I watched A Few Good Men, which is my favourite film of all time. It is the best film ever. And also The Firm. In both films, Tom Cruise plays a sort of young lawyer. But in A Few Good Men, it kind of takes him the whole film to really understand that responsibility he's been given. So if you remember at the beginning of the film, he's never been in a courtroom before. All his lawyer stuff has been done by wheeling and dealing, and the story transcribes and he ends up in the court and it's all great, and he has this courtroom battle at the end with Jack Nicholson. It's just fantastic, and I would love to play it, but it's not appropriate for Sunday morning. And in the end, after he's had this verbal spat with Jack Nicholson, and he said, you know, Jack Nicholson has promised to do nasty things to him, and Jack Nicholson calls him son. And Tom Cruise turns round to him, and it's quite near the end of the film, and he says, don't call me son. I am a lawyer and an officer in the United States Navy. And it was almost like it had suddenly clicked what his responsibility was. He was a lawyer and an officer in the United States Navy. And up until that point, I think probably that character had felt, I'm doing this because there was some father history. I think his dad was some highbrow lawyer in the Navy. And it was like, oh, well, I'll do that because my dad, you know, we think it's a good thing to do. But no, he really understood who he was. And then in The Firm, quite early on in that, again, he's a lawyer, and he knows his responsibilities as a lawyer. And if you've watched The Firm, you'll know that the FBI tried to get him to break client confidentiality over some dealings with the mafia, and it's all a bit, yeah. And he really felt as a character he couldn't do that because he knew his responsibilities as a lawyer. And at the end, again, this FBI man barges in and says, this is not what we wanted you to do, da 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 da, because what we wanted to be able to get all these mafia people. And he said, no, I wasn't going to do this. And he says, I'm still a lawyer, with references from Bendini, Lambert and Locke. And what that said to me is that all through, he knew what he was responsible for. So that's just a bit of an aside, and it helped me understand this, and I got to watch my two favourite films. So again, another question for you. Are you able to declare confidently what you have been given responsibility for? So point number two, know what responsibilities haven't been given to you. And this is a little chat to myself. I don't need to take responsibility for everything. I haven't been called to take responsibility for everything. And this is a real, and I need to be really, really careful on this one, because I'm a doer. And it came out this week in my team away day that I am, if you've ever done the Belbin team roles thing, I'm an implementer, which if there's something that needs doing, I will do it. And I will barge in if it's not being done right. And there's probably a few implementers here. And my recent testimony around this was, if you remember last week, I talked about my boss leaving, and it was kind of this expectation, not necessarily from my direct line manager now, that I would apply for this job, but it really felt like it wasn't being given to me to take responsibility for. And it's like, just because that job needed doing, I didn't need to put myself in that place to jump to fill it. And actually, it's worked out. I probably have taken on quite a bit of the responsibilities around that job, but it just didn't feel right. And actually, when Paul, my line manager now, talked to me about succession planning, they didn't have me automatically going into that post as soon as it became free. It was a 2-year plan for me to get into that, which is really, really interesting. So don't jump ahead. And what we saw in the story with Deborah is she calls Barak, doesn't she? So she knew that the responsibility for command in the army wasn't hers. So she said to Barak, "Has not the Lord God of Israel commanded you?" She puts that responsibility on him. "This is your job, Barak. I can instruct, I can help, I can give advice, but you're the one that's going to command it." And what he does, he kind of goes, "Well, if you'll go with me, I'll go. But if you won't, then I'm not going to do it." And this is what she says, and she might have been a bit miffed. So she then said, "I will surely go with you, but actually you're not going to get any glory for this. You're not taking responsibility for what you've been given. I'm not going to go. You're going to do it, but actually the outcome is going to be quite different, because JL ends up being the one that ends up killing Sisera." And in the message, it kind of says, with an attitude like that, in terms of when Barak says, "I don't want to do it," she says, "Well, with an attitude like that, then this is going to happen," which I thought was really interesting. So she knew it wasn't her responsibility to command the army, and she challenged Barak to do so, but he was really hesitant, and he did ask her to go up with him. She knew that wasn't her responsibility. And just as on a practical note for me, we're heading into revision season. Youngsters, you're in revision season again. And I know, and I learnt some lessons last year, it's not my responsibility to do revision. I can support Freddie, I can help him with his plans, but actually he's the one that needs to get his head down and do the revision. It's his responsibility. So youngsters, take that on board. It's your responsibility to do the work needed to get you through this year. And I tried to assume that responsibility, I suppose, last year, but yeah, that didn't go so well, did it, Freddie? No. So third question and the second point: have you taken responsibility for something that isn't yours to take responsibility for? So have a think about that. Number three: don't pass the responsibility you've been given to someone else. And again, I use a bit of a parenting example here. Is I can't give my responsibility as a parent to Vicky, Sue and Alison and John and Tim in leading Freddie into all he needs to be. They have a role in that, but I can't just go, "Right, youth workers, it's over to you. You sort him out." I've got clear responsibilities before God to get him to the place that he needs to be. Although I have passed some responsibilities, in particular to Vicky, on maths. And she did a great job on that last year. So that was great. And so, yeah, Proverbs 1, verse 8 to 9 says, "Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They are a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck." And then Proverbs 22, verse 6 says, "Direct your children onto the right path, and when they are older, they will not leave it." So as parents, we do have to take responsibility in the right way and not shirk that. And also in this area, it made me think about our own walks with God. We're ultimately responsible for those. We have groups of people around us to help us, but it's not the responsibility of church leaders or, you know, your friends or whatever to outwork your relationship with God. They can help you and support you, but the ultimate responsibility sits with you. And I would say that's probably the same, youngsters, as you get older and you move into that zone, I don't know what the age is, 16, 17, you need to be taking responsibility for your own walks with God. We can't do that for you as we go on. It is up to you. You know, you've been taught well, long and hard over the years. So now it's up to you to take that responsibility. So here's another question for you. Are you passing the responsibility you've been given to someone else? Are you doing that? And there might be areas where you think, yeah, actually. Do you know what? Yeah, I can see where I do that. So number four, when responsibility you held passes to someone else, don't try and take it back. And again, this is me talking to myself, because I know from what I know about my team type now, is that actually if I've delegated something to somebody or I've passed it on, I need to give them room to manoeuvre and outwork their calling in that area. I can't just, if they're not doing it how I would do it, take it back from them, and because I don't like how they're doing it, or things aren't, well, just generally because things aren't happening as quickly as I would like, because I'm that natural doer. I want things to happen now. I want them yesterday. So, and yeah, so for me, I have to say to myself that to not apply the following, that if you want something doing, do it yourself. Because actually, if somebody else is called to do something, you need to let them find their own way. And I've got a new member of staff at the moment, and I'm quite working that through with him, and he's great. And he's got a small piece of work which he's been given to do, and I just need to make sure he flourishes in that, and that he, you know, is able to have this time and the space to, yeah, to grow into his own, and not just for me to go, oh, I'll just do that, Phil, because this needs doing and needs doing by this day. Another area that I think is really, really important is when probably our sons, and again, I don't know this yet, in the future I'm sure I will, when sons and daughters get married, you know, when the man leaves the father and mother and is united to his wife, we need to be really careful that we don't interfere, because actually they're, you know, we don't have responsibility for our children once they're in the same way until once we let them go in terms of marriage. So just be really careful if any of you are in that situation. And then really, really importantly, and I think and in church leadership, obviously the transition in terms of Richard taking on the day-to-day responsibility for the church, it wouldn't be right for John to kind of try and take little bits of it back, because maybe it isn't how he would do it and all of those kinds of things. So he needs to let Richard come into all he needs to be in God in terms of leading the church. So another question, are there areas of responsibility that you once had that you haven't fully let go of? So have a think about that. And then lastly, and I think probably this is important for all of us, and I know I'm guilty of this. You know, at the beginning, there was an order, wasn't there, in terms of Deborah's responsibilities. You know, at first she served God. She was classed as a prophetess. Secondly, she was a wife. Thirdly, she was a judge. And I think that ordering is really purposeful, because it's interesting that her role as judge wasn't first. So I think it's really important to look at all of the things that God's given you to do and try and create an order. And I think sometimes things jump in and jump out a bit, you know, work pressures come in, so your work stuff might impinge on something else. But actually, it's really, really important, and I know that I need to keep balance across my whole thing, because as soon as something, particularly I suppose around work, starts to take over, particularly in terms of home stuff, it all becomes a bit disordered and a bit chaos, and I just end up getting a bit stressy over not being able to manage it all in the right way. So it's really important that we get some order into what we're doing. And again, I'll refer back to A Few Good Men, and there's a lovely quote. I think I can't remember what he's doing. Tom Cruise is speaking to one of the guys that has been accused of this killing of this other soldier, and they live by this particular code in the Marine Corps, and which I just find the whole army thing quite fascinating. And he says, well, what's this code you live by? And he says, well, it's unit, core, God, country, which is really interesting because for me, that is all feels a bit backwards. But what it was actually saying is actually the unit I'm a part of is my main responsibility first, then the Marine Corps, then God, and then the USA. Which, if you think about that order, you'd actually think it was probably, you should be God, the USA, the Marine Corps, and then the unit. But actually, in that environment, the priorities are quite flipped. And actually, you see, don't you, sometimes on people's statuses on their LinkedIn or their Twitter or whatever, that it says, you know, I'm a Christian, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, and some people are soldiers, and actually sometimes they get the soldier thing, they put that first before their family, and I don't know whether that's whether that's a right thing or a wrong thing, but it's really interesting, the whole military thing. So I just would challenge you to have a look at your responsibilities and how they're ordered and whether there's right priority into them. And interestingly, referring back to, I suppose, Richard's testimony about the whole job thing, actually, if he'd have taken that more senior role, then that might have created some imbalance in terms of the responsibilities he was going to be taking on in the church, and whether you could have managed those two side by side. I don't quite know. And I suppose with me, if I'd have ended up with this more senior post and the responsibilities that Dave and I, you know, now have working alongside Richard and Kim, it might have just caused a bit of imbalance. So those are the 5 points. So in conclusion, so for me, this is my conclusion. When we clearly take hold of our responsibilities and manage them well before God, we'll know the favour of God, and we'll probably be given more responsibility. And I think that displays itself in very different ways, depending on what we've been given to do. In Daniel, and 6 verse 4, it talks about Daniel. It says, Darius the Mede decided to divide the kingdom into 120 provinces, and he appointed a high officer to rule over each province. The king also chose Daniel and two others as administrators to supervise the high officers and protect the king's interests. Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all the other administrators and high officers. Because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. Then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs, and they couldn't find anything to criticise or condemn. He was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. And that's how I want to be seen in all the things that I'm responsible for. I want to be faithful, I want to always be responsible and be completely trustworthy. And I think it's interesting as well, when you're doing things well, you're doing the right things, actually in the background sometimes there can be a bit of a niggling thing, and people try to find fault in the way that you do things. And I've had a bit of that myself this week, and that, you know, people might have an opinion of how I manage my team. But that's the way I manage the team. It's very. It would be different for somebody else. They wouldn't do it how I did it or do it. And actually, what I am doing, I'm being completely faithful, I'm responsible, and I think I'm trustworthy in what I'm doing. And then lastly, just referring to the servant who managed his 5 talents really, really well. So I think that was Matthew 25 and 21. The master was full of praise and said, well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I will give you many more responsibilities, and let's celebrate together. So, and also, what I think is that when those things are well ordered, managed well before God, that there is a measure of peace and stability and success. It's just when it all becomes a bit out of order, you feel a bit uncertain and a bit not sure. And in the very last verse in Judges 5, it says, in Judges 5 and 31, the very last sentence, it says, and the land had rest for 40 years. And I think because Deborah knew who she was, what she was called to do, what she was responsible for, what she wasn't responsible for, that there was rest in that land for 40 years. So that's my main points. Now for the homework. So, right, so again, some of these questions will have come out. So, number one, what things has God given you to take responsibility for? It'd be good to have a real think about those. Are there things you're taking responsibility for that may not be God-given? Do you need to reprioritise any of your responsibilities to get some balance back in what you're doing? And then lastly, are there any new areas of responsibility you feel you may be given, and how are you going to move those forward? And that's all I've got to say.